Our third case and last scheduled case for January, 2011 AP 2907 CR State versus Antonio D. Brown. Arguing on behalf of the state is Assistant Attorney General O'Neill. Counsel?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court, Assistant Attorney General Aaron O'Neill, appearing on behalf of the state, which is the petitioner in this case. The state is asking this court to reverse the Court of Appeals decision, which held that a tail lamp on an automobile made up of three individual lights is in good working order within the meaning of Wisconsin Statute Section 347.13 sub 1 when only two of those lights are functioning.
One on each side? What, two on one side and one on the other?
There were two tail lamps on the car, and we're only talking about one of the tail lamps. Each tail lamp consists of three bulbs, and on one of the tail lamps, only two bulbs were functioning.
Okay. And how many are required under 347.13.1?
The statute requires that when there are two tail lamps on a car, that they be maintained and that they be kept in good working order.
Mm-hmm.
And it is our position that good working order means that all the tail lamps must, or all the bulbs that are a component of the tail lamp must be functioning in order to meet that requirement.
Might have, yeah, more than two lights.
Correct.
Okay. So you're saying that the cop appropriately interpreted 347.13?
That's correct.
All right. And you're going to also discuss if he didn't interpret 347.13 properly.
Are you asking me if he, what are the consequences
of that? I'm saying it's possible that your interpretation is not correct. Right?
That is correct.
All right. So you have to defend the police officer if his interpretation was right or if his interpretation was not right, it seems to me.
Correct. We have to defend it whether that we're contesting that his interpretation of good working order within the meaning of the statute, was correct.
Okay. And his meaning of the statute that you needed all the bulbs on, even if you had one on each side.
I guess I don't understand your question.
Well, were there more bulbs than needed under the statute in this case?
The statute doesn't specifically address the number of bulbs involved. It just requires that the car have, if it has two tail lamps, and the administrative code requires pretty much every car now to have two tail lamps.
Right. Okay. Some cars have more than two tail lights.
I don't believe I've ever seen one with more than
two
tail lights.
What about the Audi? What about the Audi pictured in the defendant's brief?
That is a single tail lamp that consists of, I believe it's 27 or 28 component bulbs.
Okay. That's your interpretation of the statute.
Yes, that's okay. Our interpretation.
Justice Bradley. Okay.
Mr. O'Neill, I read someplace, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there was some argument being made that the bulb that apparently was not working was basically a bulb that came on only when the brakes went on. Is that an issue at all in this case?
I don't know that it is. The Court of Appeals, the defendant raised that argument in the circuit court as a basis to suppress the gun. And the Court of Appeals, the parties were proceeding under the assumption that that bulb that was burned out was part of the tail lamp. And I think reading the Court of Appeals decision correctly, they seemed to make that assumption as well.
What were the exact findings of the circuit court here as to the facts? How many bulbs, how many lights, whether it was on, was a taillight when the brake was put on, or if it wasn't, or what the light was that illuminated the license plate. What were the exact findings of the circuit court?
With respect to the tail lamp versus stop lamp or brake light issue, there is no specific finding from the circuit court of what the bulb that was not lit, what it was a part of.
Well, did the circuit court find that that anything was not in good working order?
The good working order issue was raised first in a post-conviction motion when the defendant raised it as an alternative basis to revisit the suppression issue. In the original suppression motion was whether it was a tail lamp bulb that was part of a tail lamp or the bulb was part of the stop lamp. In the post-conviction motion, the defendant argued that, if I remember correctly, even assuming that the bulb was part of the tail lamp, only 2 out of 3 of the bulbs needed to be working. And the circuit court, after the suppression hearing and immediately before the plea hearing, made a finding that sort of addressed the brake lamp versus, the stop lamp versus tail lamp issue, saying, well, even if the officers were wrong that it was part of the tail lamp, they could reasonably believe that it was based on the age of the car and based on their unfamiliarity with the car.
Are these the facts, and I get them from paragraph 6, I guess, of the Court of Appeals opinion. In the back, on each side, there are lights, and each set of lights has 4 bulbs. I just wonder what I'm doing when I'm asking this question. But this is E-I-E-I-O. Each has 4 bulbs. The first and the third are lit all the time, and they are working, according to the Court of Appeals opinion and paragraph 6. And they are under a red panel. Now, the fourth light in this two sets of bulbs is white, and it is next to the license plate, and it goes on only when the vehicle is in reverse. So they've got 2 red ones. They're on all the time. That's the first and the third. The fourth one is white, and it goes on only in reverse. Now we got one left, and that's the middle red light. That is the second light on each side of the vehicle, and that's the brake light. And that goes on when you brake. That's what the testimony, I thought, was as to the lights and the function of the lights. Do I have anything wrong on that? Help me.
Well, that is the summary of the driver's testimony. It doesn't reflect any factual findings by the circuit court.
Okay. Is there any contest? And I just don't know. Is there any contest to this series, these two sets of 4 lights and their functions? Is there any contest to that?
I believe the state has contested that during the circuit court proceedings.
Oh, then I'm missing that. Tell me which light is being contested.
The middle light. It is, I think everyone has assumed since the, even despite what you just read from the Court of Appeals, they go on to assume that the holding in their case is that even assuming that it was part of the tail lamp, it didn't need to be functioning in order to be in good working order.
What do you think would have happened if Mr. Antonio Brown hadn't been sitting in the back seat? Let's just say the driver, Mr. Lipsy, is driving and there's a female companion and there's nobody in the back seat. And the officers stop behind the car. What would likely have happened?
I think they would have approached the car and talked to them about the burned-out tail lamp, what they believe was a burned-out tail lamp.
Did they have any justification to search the car?
The justification for the search of the car was Mr. Brown's actions in response to the stop.
He's shuffling the feet.
He made several movements leaning forward. He was in the back seat, and he made several movements leaning forward towards the front seat.
Furtive movements showing possibility hiding something.
Yeah. Well, yes. It suggested he was hiding something. And in response, the officers who stopped the car ordered the occupants to show their hands. Mr. Brown was the only one who didn't comply. They approached the car, and they saw him kicking something with a wooden handle underneath the seat.
Counselor, what if the officer's interpretation of good working order was incorrect, but he believed
that the statute did require that all of the tail lamps must be operational, would he still have had reasonable suspicion for the stop?
In terms of if the officer being out, he wouldn't have had, if the officer was, well, it depends if whether the officer was correct that if the officer was incorrect that all the bulbs needed to be lit, he could still have reasonable suspicion under other circumstances, but not because under our definition of that the lamp needs to be in good working order.
Well, this case, the only reason he stopped the car, as I understand it, is he thought it was a violation of 347.13, right?
Correct.
All right. 347.13 says that the car has to have one tail lamp. Now, I've been driving it a lot of years, and I've never referred to anything as a tail lamp, but 340.0166 defines tail lamp as a device to designate the rear of a vehicle by a warning light, right?
Yes.
I assume that means that when you put on, that there's a light on the back of your car, one on each side, that tells you there's a car in front of you. Otherwise, what you have is a totally dark object at night that you can't see. So if you want to see that there's a car in front of you, that car has to be lit, right? And that is a tail lamp. And it just says a device that has a warning light. It doesn't tell you how many bulbs it has to have.
No, that's correct.
Okay. And this did have a device at the rear of the vehicle with a warning light, right?
The car in this case, yeah, two of them.
Right. So now we're debating whether it needed two bulbs or one bulb to satisfy 347.13. And the state's position is whatever the device was, it had to be fully lit. So if it had 30 bulbs, they all had to be lit because the 30 bulbs constitute, or 15 on each side, constitute one tail lamp.
Each set of bulbs on each side is a tail lamp.
Yeah, 15 bulbs equal one tail lamp.
Correct.
In the state's position.
If that's what the manufacturer makes on the car, yes.
So now, Justice Rogenczyk says to you, that's the state's interpretation. And if the state is right, the officer is right. And if the officer is right as to this interpretation of the law, then it had reasonable suspicion or probable cause to make the stop.
Yes.
Right? That's the state's argument.
Yes.
What if the state is wrong and that this car satisfies 347.13 because it had one lit bulb on each side?
Then the stop would have been inappropriate under 347.13.
Well, let's not talk about appropriate or inappropriate. Let's talk about whether it's lawful or not.
It would not have been lawful.
Okay. So
the officer has to be able to correctly interpret a statute when he stops a car or his stop is not based on reasonable suspicion? Wouldn't it be based on probable cause if he correctly interpreted the statute? Why doesn't he get reasonable suspicion if he knows the statute he's trying to enforce, but he interprets it differently than the court may interpret it later?
We're conceding that at this point the officer had to be correct within his interpretation of the law.
An interesting conclusion.
Well, I'll give you
that he couldn't reasonably believe that the taillight, that might have been a taillight that was out, and then pull over, stop the car in order to investigate further.
That's really the question she was trying to ask him.
No,
his reasonable belief. Here's that argument
no,
here?
No, we are not saying that the officer could not have the reasonable belief that the taillight was out and under our interpretation of the statute, and that he could
let me give you one more simple example. The officer thinks that cruising around the square, that the maximum speed is 25 miles an hour. Let's just assume That's what the officer thinks the law is. And he clocks someone going 35 miles an hour. But let us assume that the speed limit is 40 miles an hour. So the correct interpretation of the law is a 40-mile-per-hour zone. He thinks it's a 25-mile-per-hour zone. And the car is within the speed limit. And the officer stops the car. Is that stop good?
No, because the officer was incorrect about the law.
That's what I thought your answer would be. And that's why your answer is where the officer misinterprets the law, then misinterprets the law and the car is within the law, the stop is neither reasonable suspicion nor probable cause, and therefore the evidence has to be suppressed.
Correct.
I don't see in your concession how you can ever differentiate between reasonable suspicion and probable cause, because if he's right, obviously he's got probable cause of a violation. If he's wrong on his interpretation of the statute, the guy's not going to get a ticket, but I'm not sure that that is the criteria for whether or not the stop was based on reasonable suspicion of the officer that he had violated the law. I mean, what you're saying is his suspicion can't be reasonable unless he's correct under the law. If that's the case, there's no difference between reasonable suspicion and probable cause for a stop then. You have to interpret the law correctly to get to probable cause, but under your interpretation, you also have to interpret it correctly to get to reasonable suspicion, right?
I think the officer has the obligation to interpret the law correctly, but whether the facts that are apparent to the officer are, you know, a clearly established violation of that law, or whether it's reasonable to suspect that there might be something up that warrants further investigation, that's where the reasonable suspicion analysis comes into play.
All right.
Could I go back to the question I asked? I asked, if the guy hadn't been in the back seat, what would the officer have done? And I thought your answer was that the officer would get out and probably tell the driver, you have a light out in the back. I didn't hear you say in that answer that the officer would have given a citation.
He may have, he or she may have, or might not have. I don't, it's up to the officer's discretion. I mean, he may have given a citation, he may not have.
Okay. Now, was the officer acting improperly unless he had the authority to give a citation? In other words, is it improper when a light is objectively out to stop a car and simply go and say, there's a light out in the back you might want to take care of?
Is that proper to do that?
Yeah.
I believe that is. If the officer has the belief that it's part of the tail lamp and he stopped him, stopped the driver because of that belief, there could be facts that come out during the stop that would say, well, that lamp doesn't need to be lit because it's actually part of the brake lamp. But the officer, when the officer stops a car, he has the authority to give a citation if there's a violation of the law.
Well, see, your answer to Justice Prosser is different than your answer to me. Because we're asking you the same question. We are asking you if the officer reasonably believes that one taillight being out is a violation of the law and he stops the car, does he have reasonable suspicion to do it? And to me, you said no. To him, you said yes. At least that's what I'm hearing.
If the officer reasonably believes that the bulb is part of the tail lamp, he has the authority to stop the car to investigate further.
Even if his belief is incorrect? See, that's
his belief of interpretation of the law or his belief about the facts. I mean, I think that's where maybe I'm getting turned around here.
Okay.
He could be wrong that the bulb is part of the tail lamp, and in reality it's part of some other lamp system. He can't be wrong that the law requires all the bulbs to be lit. So if the officer reasonably believes that the bulb that is out is required to be on, is part of the tail lamp, and the law requires that the tail lamp has all component bulbs lit, then the officer can stop the car because his belief that the bulb needs to be lit, as long as it's a reasonable belief that the bulb is part of the tail lamp.
So do you think the Court of Appeals should have addressed the officer's reasonable belief instead of just the statute?
Don't know if it was necessarily briefed before the Court of Appeals. I did not handle this case before the Court of Appeals, so I don't know if it was an argument that we necessarily raised. I think if you read their decision, though, they do say this is a matter solely of probable cause. They do not, because the officer was claiming that he had observed a violation of the statute, and they say that in that situation only probable cause applies. And I would disagree with that. I would say that...
The trial court went further than that, right?
I'm sorry?
The trial court went further than that.
That's correct. The trial court in its, both at the, I think it was the plea hearing, and later in its post-conviction decision, reaffirmed what it said at the plea hearing, that even if the officers were mistaken, as I read the circuit court's comments, they say even if the officers were mistaken that the bulb that was out was part of the tail lamp, they could still reasonably believe that it was, because it was an older car, and they both testified, or at least one of them testified, that they weren't familiar with the car when they made the stop.
So you don't have very many findings by the trial court that definitively state with what exactly was out on the car, whether it fitted tail lamp, or bulb, or tail light, or brake light. And the state, as a matter of law, concedes that if the officer misinterpreted the law and therefore the car was comported with the law, then this was a bad stop. Is that right?
If the law requires that all parts, all bulbs in a tail lamp be lit, then yes, the stop was bad.
Say that again, please.
If the law requires that all the bulbs that are part of a tail lamp be lit, then we are conceding that the stop was violated the Fourth Amendment.
Why couldn't it be based upon the officer's reasonable belief that the tail light was out?
It could be based on the... If the officer could reasonably believe that that bulb was part of the tail lamp, and the law requires that all the bulbs be lit in the tail lamp, if that's correct, then the stop would be valid as... Even if he's wrong about the facts. But if he's wrong about the law, then we are conceding that the stop was invalid.
What is the case or rule that you base the differentiation between the officer being right on the facts and right on the law, or wrong on the facts and wrong on the law?
I'm now blanking on the name.
Pardon me?
I'm now blanking on the name of the case that says that officer cannot be wrong in his interpretation of the law. It is...
Is it Longcore?
I'm sorry? Longcore. Thank you.
All right. Cited on page 25 of your brief.
Correct.
Okay.
And we are not challenging the holding in Longcore.
Okay. And here, you think that he was right about the law. And that every bulb had to be lit, regardless of the number of bulbs in the tail lamp or light. Lamp just means device.
Correct. And that's what, using that's our interpretation of what good working order requires under 347.13 sub 1.
And we can question Ms. Schreiber about that issue. And this issue of law versus fact is discussed in the amicus brief.
That's correct. And I understand the amicus brief. They agree somewhat with our position.
That's the next thing I was going to ask you. It seems to me you agree with the amicus's distinction on the law, that is, between a mistake of law and a mistake of fact, but you disagree with the interpretation of the law in this case. And
we disagree with the Court of Appeals interpretation of the law and the defendant's
right.
proposed interpretation.
So you agree that lawful police stops of vehicles for traffic offenses may be based on a police officer's own mistake. I'm reading from the amicus brief. Only if the mistake is one of fact and is objectively reasonable. a police officer's independent mistake of law cannot provide reasonable suspicion or probable cause justifying a traffic stop. I'm just reading from the amicus's table of contents summary of their view. You agree with that?
We agree with that.
You just don't apply. You just don't think these rules apply here because there was a reasonable interpretation, a correct interpretation of the law, and if there was a mistake of fact, and there's no reason to think it was, it would have been objectively reasonable.
That's correct.
All right. And you're relying on law kicker. And the amicus brief cites cases of the Court of Appeals that support the amicus's legal principles.
On pages of the amicus brief?
I'm sorry. The appendix in the amicus brief. They quote cases that they think support that.
The law versus fact distinction?
Pardon me?
Distinction between a mistake of law and a mistake of fact. They cite two cases from the Court of Appeals that we also cite in our brief about saying that an officer's good faith, reasonable mistake of fact can provide a basis for a stop so long as the officer's interpretation of the law is correct.
If this court should agree with your interpretation of the law, the end, conviction upheld, and on the second issue of the search, it would be a standard Terry kind of analysis. This was enough suspicion to justify the search, and Gantt doesn't apply.
That's correct. That's our
Gantt applies only in arrest. Okay. Thank you. But if we disagree with you on the law, what happens? Do we have to reverse the conviction?
If you disagree with me on the law that all bulbs on a tail lamp do not need to be lit, I think the conviction could be reversed unless there is another basis for finding that the officer would have been objectively reasonable for stopping the car under another provision of the law. But we are not making any specific argument in regards to that.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Hannah B. Scheiber. Is it Scheiber or Sheba? Scheiber. Sheba. Representing the defendant, Mr. Brown.
May I proceed?
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Hannah Sheber on behalf of the defendant appellant, Antonio D. Brown. We ask this court to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals. This case, at its core, involves one central question. Is a tail lamp with two of three bulbs lit in good working order in accordance with the Wisconsin statutes, where the tail lamp as a whole is sufficient to designate the rear of the car to cars traveling behind it? As the Court of Appeals held, the correct answer to this question is yes. As the Court of Appeals explained, the statutes do not demand that every individual component of a single tail lamp be in perfect condition. Instead, the statutes require that in order for a tail lamp to be in good working order, that tail lamp must be sufficient to designate the rear of the car to cars traveling behind it. The state in this case presented no evidence to suggest that the tail lamp on the driver's side of Mr. Brown's car was in any way insufficient to designate the rear of the car to cars traveling behind it. The police in this case, therefore, conducted a traffic stop based on a mistake of law. They lacked a lawful basis to conduct that stop, and we therefore ask this court to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals. I'm going to be focusing my argument on two main points. First, that the Court of Appeals holding in this case reflects the plain language of the statutes, and second, that the Court of Appeals holding provides sufficient guidance and a workable, reasonable standard for police. But before I turn to those two points, I'd like to briefly address two points made by the state. First, in this case, as the Court of Appeals explained, the correct legal standard here is whether the officers had probable cause. The officers in this case did not testify that they observed something which they believe had facts that warranted further investigation to determine whether or not a traffic code violation had occurred. Instead, the officers testified that they saw the tail lamp with one unlit bulb, believed that to be a violation of the statutes, and conducted the stop accordingly. Therefore, under Longcore, the question is one of probable cause. Second, I want to address the state's argument concerning a good faith mistake of fact.
And that's in response to some of the questions you got, which said, hey, regardless of his interpretation of the statute, wasn't there reasonable suspicion that there was something the matter with the taillights?
Right.
And you're saying that's not this case.
That's not this case. It may be other cases, but it's not this one, because the officers in this case testified they observed what they believed at that point, before the stop, to already be a violation. And the question, therefore, is whether that constituted probable cause. I'd also like to address the state's argument.
Can we switch this into a reasonable suspicion case? Even if they didn't have probable cause, they sure had reasonable suspicion. An objective observer would have reasonable suspicion.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And the reason I don't believe so is that even though reasonable suspicion is an objective analysis, I believe the subjective officer still has to have indicated suspicions that would warrant further investigation.
They have to have an articulable.
Right, facts that would warrant further investigation. And then the question becomes, objectively, were those facts that the officer pointed to reasonable to warrant that further investigation? So that may be a different case, but it's not the case today. Turning to the state's point concerning an officer's good faith mistake of fact, the argument that insofar as this may not have actually been a component of the tail lamp, the officers in that situation still, if there were a mistake of fact, acted reasonably. This entire argument is irrelevant unless this court does all of the following. Unless this court reverses the Court of Appeals holding and adopts the state's proposed standard. Unless this court affirmatively holds that there was a mistake of fact in this case when, as Your Honors have noted, we have a record that in no way affirmatively establishes a mistake of fact. Third, unless this court establishes that a police officer's mistake of fact would be evaluated under either the state's proposed subjective good faith exception or the Wachtel amicus brief suggestion of an objective reasonableness standard. And lastly, unless this court determines that the police officer's actions, in this case specifically, were either subjectively in good faith or objectively reasonable. This court need not and should not stretch this far as the plain language of the statute supports the Court of Appeals holding. And that leads me to my first
Which
point.
Which statute are you talking about? The lamp statute?
Wisconsin Statutes 340.01 sub 66 and Wisconsin Statute 347.13 sub 1. Statute 340.01 sub 66, as Your Honor, Chief Justice noted, defines a tail lamp as a device to designate the rear of a vehicle by a warning light. Wisconsin Statute Section 347 sub 13 tells us that no vehicle equipped at the time of manufacture with two tail lamps shall be operated upon highways unless the car has two tail lamps in good working order. And the state agrees that really the question in this case hinges on the definition of what it means for a tail lamp to be in good working order. The statutes tell us what it means for a tail lamp to be in good working order. 347 sub 13 sub 1 tells us that a tail lamp must, when lighted during hours of darkness, emit a red light plainly visible from a distance of 500 feet to the rear. Thus, by the plain language of the statutes, if a car comes equipped with two tail lamps, both tail lamps must be in good working order, and that means that the car must have two tail lamps which are viewable from 500 feet to the rear, giving off a red light. Therefore, a tail lamp may be in good working order, like Mr. Brown's car, where every individual component of that tail lamp is not in perfect condition. It's not a question of perfect condition. It's not a question of percentages. It's whether, as the Court of Appeals held, the tail lamp is, as a whole is sufficient to designate the rear of the car to cars traveling behind it. Nevertheless, the state asked this court to reject the Court of Appeals holding and effectively amend the statutes to impose a heightened requirement of perfect condition. But this is not supported by the plain language of the statute. Beyond the plain language of 347.13 and 340.01 sub 66, we look at surrounding statutes when interpreting, when discerning statutory interpretation. Surrounding statutes support the Court of Appeals interpretation and further reveal why the state's proposed interpretation is problematic. Tail lamps are not the only component of a car under Chapter 347 that has to be in good working order. This phrase appears many times throughout this, that chapter. Two examples: brakes have to be in good working order, and windshield wipers have to be in good working order. And each of these statutes tell us what those components of the car need to do to be in good working order. Brakes have to be able to stop a car under normal condition that's traveling at 20 miles an hour within 50 feet. Under the state's proposed interpretation, let's say someone's driving a car with brakes and the brake pads have worn down slightly. Now, of course, a police officer presumably would not be able to observe this to conduct a traffic stop based on this. But looking at the state's proposed interpretation, if someone's driving a car with brakes that are worn down, but that brake is still nevertheless able to stop the car within 50 feet going 20 miles an hour, under the state's interpretation, that car, that brake would not be in good working order despite satisfying the requirements of the statute. Windshield wipers. Windshield wipers have to be in good working order, and the statutes tell us that windshield wipers are there to remove rain, snow, or other moisture from a car. If, let's say, a portion of...
Let me interrupt you for mm-hmm. just a moment.
Okay.
I'm sitting here, and I'm trying to figure out how do I determine what's a mistake of law and what's a mistake of fact. What's the simple rule here that leads me to decide for you that this is a mistake of law, or for the state that, no, it's not a mistake of law, it's a mistake of fact? How do I make that determination?
This was a mistake of law because the officers conducted the traffic stop because they believed that under Wisconsin Statute 347 sub 13, every single bulb of a tail lamp had to be lit. That was not a misunderstanding of the facts as they observed it before they conducted the traffic stop. That was, we look at something, we see this to be a violation based on the law, and we conduct a traffic stop for that reason. So when the officers conducted the stop, the reason they did so was based on a misunderstanding of what the statute required and not a misunderstanding of the facts. By contrast, one of the cases the state cites in support of its position, an unpublished Court of Appeals decision, let me see if I can find the specific name. Ryerson. That was a mistake of fact case, and that was the case where the officer sees a license plate, believes it to be a number 6, I believe, then pulls the car over, having entered in that license plate number, and then it turns out that, in fact, it was not a 6, it was an 8. May have been the other way around, but it was an error concerning the fact of what number is that on the license plate. So when the police officer in that situation conducted the stop, the officer's mistake there was not whether this particular person had violated any of the statutes or whether the license plate was a violation of the statute. The confusion there was that number a 6 or an 8? So that would be an example of a mistake of fact leading to a traffic stop.
Well, what if I'm Officer Schultz and I think the statute says you got to have taillights in good working order?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at this taillight, and I see there's one of these bulbs that isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, by gosh, that's not in good working order.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a mistake of law or a mistake of fact?
That's a mistake of law because it's a mistaken interpretation of the statutory requirement.
Doesn't the statute talk about good working order?
The statute does talk about good working order, and what the statute says, in our opinion, or our argument, is that good working order means that the tail lamp is viewable from a distance of 500 feet to the rear. So in that situation, the statute is telling us what it means for a tail lamp to be in good working order. So good working order is not simply a matter of the officer's opinion. That goes to what is or is not a violation of the statute.
And you think the statute is clear in defining good working order to mean observable from 500 feet?
Yes. Yes. That's the plain language of the statute. It's supported by surrounding, the surrounding statutes in that the legislature, through the statutes, tells us what's required on cars and tells us we need two tail lamps and they have to be in good working order, and then explains the purpose of the tail lamp and what it needs to do. And what that tail lamp needs to do is designate the rear of the car from a distance of 500 feet.
What's the situation if two of the three red lights are out?
So under our under the Court of Appeals holding, which reflects the plain language of the statute, the question for the officer is simple. Is that tail lamp as a whole sufficient to designate the rear of that car from a distance of 500 feet? So it's not a question of the percentage of bulbs that are in operation. It's whether that tail lamp in its entirety is viewable from that distance.
Let's say the car is driving like this. Mm-hmm. The officer comes off an intersecting street.
Okay.
And isn't 500 feet
right.
behind.
I mean,
you're not asking the officer to go back almost a football field and a half behind the car. Can I see it? I mean, there's a certain impracticality about what you're arguing here.
We're not asking that, Your Honor, for the officer to back up to that requisite distance. No. I think in the context of driving, 500 feet is a little under a tenth of a mile, so I think in many circumstances an officer would be at a distance of 500 feet away. But we're not saying that an officer would have to do that. Instead, this is something that would be based on an officer's training and experience to say, based on my training and experience, I do or do not believe that this tail lamp would be viewable from that distance. And this is something that the legislature, as demonstrated through the statute, already presumes and demands that an officer be able to do based on his or her training and experience. Estimating distances, in particular a distance of 500 feet, is something that is required by numerous provisions of the traffic code. For example, Wisconsin Statute Section 346.90 makes it unlawful for a driver to follow an emergency vehicle, so like an ambulance, that's responding to a call within a distance of 500 feet. So in order for police to be able to determine whether or not someone is violating that statute, in that context, police would have to be able to estimate distance. Statutes addressing farm equipment, bicycles operating during darkness, emergency lights, tow trucks, and non-motor vehicles, among others, all impose requirements in the traffic code that the lights, lamps, or reflectors be viewable from a distance of 500 feet. Another example, Wisconsin Statute 347 sub 12 sub 1 addresses high beams, brights on headlights. And it says that if your car comes equipped with multiple beam headlamps, if you are within 500 feet of an approaching car or you're following a car within 500 feet, you have to dim the headlamps. And, in fact, the Court of Appeals in State versus Tomaszewski, 2010 WI App 51, upheld a traffic stop where an officer in that situation estimated that the driver, that he observed the driver being within 500 feet of another car and not dimming the brights. And so this estimation of distances is something that the legislature already presumes that our police officers be able to do. So this standard does create a workable standard for police. And to that point, the state argues that it would simply be easier to require that every individual component of a tail lamp be lit at all time. But in many ways, the state's proposed standard is more complicated. Under the state standard, whether or not someone is violating the statute differs from car to car to car to car. As we know, There may be cars that have only one bulb in the tail lamp. There may be cars like Mr. Brown's where there are three bulbs in one tail lamp. There may be cars like the Audi we pictured in our brief where there are 30 bulbs comprising one tail lamp. And so instead of officers having to become familiar with which components of the rear design of a car are or are not part of the tail lamp, the Court of Appeals standard instead asks police officers one question. Do you see two tail lamps on the back of this car that give off a red light from 500 feet away? Indeed, in this case, the state noted that it would be reasonable for the officers to be confused about what would or would not be part of a tail lamp because this was an older car. So again, instead of asking police to be familiar with the rear light design of every single car, this Court of Appeals standard, which reflects the plain language of the statute, asks police officers to ask one simple question. Furthermore, on that point, the state also argues that its position or interpretation of the statute better promotes safety. First on that, I think the state here confuses number of bulbs with viewable distance. But, again, as we can see, if you have a car with only one bulb in the tail lamp, that would be different than a car with three bulbs in the tail lamp, and that's different than a car with 30 bulbs in the tail lamp. All bulbs are not going to be the same size. They're not necessarily going to be the same brightness. So I don't think it's as simple of a question as number of bulbs equals safer or less safe. And even beyond that, this question decides when police have the ability to conduct a traffic stop that implicates someone's liberty protections and constitutional rights. And as we know in the context of Fourth Amendment, the question is often one of balancing two competing interests of protecting the right of the public, and recognizing the rights of the individual. The Court of Appeals holding, which reflects the plain language of the statute, strikes this appropriate balance because the legislature, through the statute, has told us what a tail lamp needs to do in order for that tail lamp and that car to be operating safely on our roads, and that is to designate the rear of the car to a car traveling behind it.
If the officer, let's say you were driving, you're driving that vehicle.
Sure.
Is the 77 vehicle called a classic of some sort? Or I don't know. So it's just an old car. Yeah, never mind.
I don't know that much
If I'm the officer and I stop your car and I come up to you and say, Sheba, I just wanted to let you know, I don't know if you knew this, that one of your lights is out on the back. Mm-hmm. I have violated the law?
If I'm driving a car where even with that one bulb out, my tail lamp as a whole still is viewable from a distance of 500 feet, then I don't believe that officer has a right to stop me. And I understand, as the state pointed out, that in some ways it would be nicer or more safe for the police to do just that. But that has to be balanced with the rights of the individual. In many ways, it would be more safe for police officers to be able to stop anybody at any point and do an entire safety inspection of that person's car to make sure that that car is completely in compliance with the statute. But we don't do that because we recognize the importance of the rights of the individual and the fact that a detention by a police officer, however temporary, is still a seizure and still implicates a person's liberty rights. The Court of Appeals in this case correctly recognized that the statutes do not require each individual component of a tail lamp to be in perfect condition. Instead, the statutes require that the tail lamp as a whole be sufficient to designate the rear of the car to cars traveling behind it. The state in this case failed to present any evidence that the driver's side tail lamp on Mr. Brown's car with two lit bulbs did not sufficiently designate the rear of the car to cars traveling behind it. As one last point going to the record and any ambiguities here in the record about whether or not, about what bulb this was, about what needed to be lit, any ambiguities there would be the state's failure to meet its burden that this was in any way a violation of the traffic statute. The Court of Appeals correctly interpreted the statute. The Court of Appeals standard provides a workable standard for police, and we therefore ask this court to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals.
What about the sentence credit issue?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what happened with the sentence credit was that concerns when someone receives concurrent sentences and there's a revocation sentence, and then someone receives a sentence that's concurrent to the revocation sentence, when does the revocation sentence actually begin in order to break the custody connection for the subsequently imposed sentence? In this case, what happened was Mr. Brown's supervision in a different case, when he was arrested, his supervision in a different case was revoked, and despite the revocation, he remained at the jail. He was then sentenced in this case, and then after being sentenced in this case, was transported to the institution. And what the statutes tell us, 973.155, establishes that a convicted offender shall be given credit towards the service of his or her sentence for all days spent in custody in connection with the course of conduct for which the sentence was imposed. So the question is, when is Mr. Brown no longer in custody in connection with the sentence in this case?
Is this something – this was not briefed here.
It was not.
Is this a case? Was something we have to decide, or we have to if you should not prevail, that we have to send this back
mm-hmm.
to the Court of Appeals?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have to send this back to the Court of Appeals on sentence credit should you not prevail?
If this court wishes to address it, I think that certainly could be helpful.
But we have to go back to your Court of Appeals brief.
Right.
All right.
Right. We haven't briefed it at this point. The state conceded it at the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals didn't consider it, and it hasn't been briefed here.
Okay. So that's the response. If we say nothing, what happens?
If you say nothing on that issue,
mm-hmm.
and this assumes that there's a reversal here,
mm-hmm.
Then we would ask this court to send it back to the Court of Appeals to address that issue.
And if it's an affirmance, we don't have to send it back.
No, because his conviction is reversed.
All right.
Would you like me to discuss the legal elements of that further?
Oh, I'm just pointing out that that's an issue here.
Yes.
It's somewhat
right.
opaque.
Right. If, right. Yes.
Is there also an ineffective assistance of counsel issue?
Good idea.
There is, Your Honor. Mr. Brown argued post-conviction that counsel was ineffective for failing to make the argument that 347.13 doesn't require that every component of a tail lamp be lit. The state, in its brief to this court, notes that it is not disputing or not arguing that Mr. Brown forfeited his ability to make that argument. But insofar as trial counsel failed to make the argument that every component of a tail lamp has to be lit, then it's our position that trial counsel was ineffective for failing to do so.
But there's no prejudice if that issue is fully briefed here and decided. If the issue of what is the correct interpretation of 347.13 is before this court is decided for or against the defendant,
right.
That issue falls by the wayside, says
yes,
the state. Do you agree with that?
The ineffective assistance of counsel argument was raised, I believe, alternatively. So insofar as trial counsel failed to argue that every individual bulb of a tail lamp need to be lit, then counsel was ineffective for failing to do so. Addressing this issue on the merits, if this court should do that, then the ineffective assistance of counsel argument need not be addressed. which is what the Court of Appeals did.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Well, let me just say one other thing. The petition for review in this case, which was the state's, stated the issue as, in determining legality of a vehicle stop under Fourth Amendment, did the Court of Appeals properly conclude that the detained line is 66% functional is in good working order, and this cannot serve as a basis for the officer's probable cause, which is what you started your argument with. And it means probable cause to have committed an offense.
Right.
In this court's brief, that is not the issue that's presented by the state. And I'm going to ask this of the state. The state presented the issue at page one of its brief. Did police officers have probable cause or reasonable suspicion to stop the defendant?
Right.
Now, if there was reasonable suspicion to think that the lights were not up to the statutory standard, they could have arrested, I shouldn't say arrested, they could have made the stop for further investigation on reasonable suspicion. Right?
If they, can you repeat your question?
Yes, my question was, if they thought that the taillights here did not comport with the state statute, or they suspected that, they could have made a stop to investigate that further on reasonable suspicion, right? That's how you started your argument.
Well, our position is that in this case it was probable cause. In other circumstances, I think it would depend on the circumstances of the other case.
No, but why is this probable cause and not reasonable suspicion? It's another way of stating the issue.
Right. This is probable cause because the officers in this case observed what they believed was a violation of the statute. They were not conducting, they did not observe facts which to them appeared to perhaps be a violation, but they needed to do further investigation to determine whether or not it was a violation.
And they're bound by the reason for their stop.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's your position.
Yes, that, and I see my time has expired, and I agree.
You may respond.
That while both probable cause and reasonable suspicion are objective analyses, they are objective analyses of the subjective beliefs of the officer. And therefore, the question here, as the Court of Appeals held, is whether or not the officers were correct that this was a violation of the statute.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Neill, if you just very quickly address the sentence.
Sure.
And then go on to, if you would, other things, including probable cause and reasonable suspicion.
Absolutely. The state is conceding the sentence credit issue. We did in the Court of Appeals, and I can tell this court that when this situation has come up in the Court of Appeals, in other cases, we are also conceding that issue. He's seeking, I believe, 14 days from the time of his extended supervision revocation until the time he was sentenced in this case. And we agree that he's entitled to that credit. I agree with counsel's analysis of the statutes and the cases that she discussed, so unless the court has any further questions.
I have a question. I noticed the difference that the chief raised, I had noticed it before, between the question that we took on the petition for review, the wording of that, and the question as presented in your brief in chief here. When I had the petition for review, I had this question. So let me stick with this inquiry because I think it informs, it's informative with regard to your position. The
petition for review asked, did the Court of Appeals properly conclude that a tail lamp that is 66% functional is in good working order as required under 347.13.1. There's more, but I'm just focusing on that. Is it the state's position that anything, that there is a percentage less than 100% that would still be statutorily in good working order? Or is it the state's position that there can be nothing less than the 66% that is set forth in the question in the petition for review?
The state's position is that 100% of the bulbs that comprise the tail lamp have to be functioning in order to be good in good working order.
What if for some reason these lights in the bulb had a low wattage and they only had a couple of lights, they're both working, but they didn't show 500 feet? But is there any problem with that? Is that in good working order under the statute?
If all the bulbs are lit, but they aren't bright enough to illuminate the car at 500 feet, I don't think the good working order requirement even comes into play there. We're just dealing with a violation of the 500 feet visibility requirement.
Oh, okay. Your opposing counsel says good working order is defined in 347.13, and of course that talks about needing a red light and needing visibility from a distance of 500 feet to the rear. What's your full definition of good working order under 347.13? How do you define the requirement for good working order as it is set forth in 347.13?
The state's position, as I said in our brief, is that I use the dictionary definition of a machine is in working order when it's functioning according to its nature and its purpose. I think a more clear definition is something's in good working order when it's working like it's supposed to.
Doesn't that beg the question, what is it supposed to be doing? Is it supposed to be, as your opposing counsel argues, it's supposed to be lighting a distance of 500 feet to the rear?
That is what the minimum requirement for a tail lamp is in the state of Wisconsin, but there are, as we've discussed, for many varieties of tail lamps, and those tail lamps are designed to light a car's rear by using any number of bulbs. And when one of those bulbs is not working, it is not doing its purpose of using all those bulbs to illuminate the rear of a car.
When I first read the petition for review, just read the issue, that's the first thing I did, I thought to myself, does this mean the light is sort of working? That the light, I was thinking of it an individual bulb, that it's not as bright as it should be, it's dimming out, it's on its way to not working, and it's only functioning 66 2/3. What happens if you have a light like that that kind of isn't as bright as it should be?
In this circumstance...
Is that working or not working, then?
There's a case that I cite in my brief. It's from another state where they talk about the difference between tail lamps on both sides of the cars. We're not taking the position that a bulb that might be on its way out is necessarily means the whole tail lamp is not in good working order. We're only addressing, at this point, a tail lamp that definitely has a bulb that is burned out.
So you're sticking to the facts that this one was out.
This one was out.
Period.
And that's what, yes, and that means it's not in good working order. Unless there are any further questions.
I'm sorry, one final question. When you say this is out, I just don't know. The Court of Appeals in paragraph 6 gave the different functions for the lights. Were those functions correct?
The discussion in paragraph 6, I read it as just a summary of the testimony, and I don't find the Court of Appeals making any sort of determination one way or the other, and I don't believe the Circuit Court did as well. So the Court of Appeals decision is based on an assumption that this burned-out bulb was part of the tail lamp.
Well, doesn't the Court of Appeals accept that one of the bulbs might have been out?
Yes.
Or dim, but the interpretation of the statute was that was okay under the statute.
I don't believe there's any dispute that whatever this bulb was, it was not lit.
I mean, that's their acceptance. You might be fighting whether it was the facts were, and you have a problem, I think, with the circuit court not making definitive statements of its findings as to the condition of these lights or bulbs. But the Court of Appeals takes the position, even if it was out, the statutory definition was it would be in good working order, and that two lit light bulbs satisfied 340.01.66, and the whole thing here was probable cause, and you don't have it. I mean, that's what their holding is, and you don't get to reasonable suspicion because that isn't the way this whole thing was tried.
Let's be precise. The Court of Appeals didn't talk about burned out. They talked about unlit. Now, there may or may not be a difference, depending on if you accept the information in paragraph 6, which one of the lights only comes on because it's a braking light and comes on, I guess, when you're braking, right? So it was unlit, and the Court of Appeals doesn't talk about burned out, but rather unlit. Am I correct in that?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Yeah, but all it cares about, 21, the two lit light bulbs, and there were two lit light bulbs. No one's debating that, right?
No.
There were two lit light bulbs making up the driver's side tail lamp, satisfied the tail lamp as a device to designate the rear of the vehicle. Under 340. That's all. Burnt out, not lit, weak. Here they say that the two lights that were on are adequate under their interpretation of the law, right?
That's correct.
So I stand corrected as to, I agree. They don't say whether it's lit or weak or burnt out.
Thank
Anything
you.
Else, counsel?
No.
So we end the argument in January on the issue of law, if not once a month. Seems like cutting once a month. What is a valid stop of an automobile? And once it's stopped, what can the officers do? And I want to thank both of you for your briefs in this matter. And 2011 AP 2907 CR State versus Antonio D. Brown hearing is completed. The court is adjourned for scheduled oral arguments in January. The court will meet in conference at 3:45 p.m. We are adjourned.